Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browder. She's Marjorie. And so if it weren't for Woodward and Bernstein, we might never have known about Alexander Butterfield. And if it weren't for Alexander Butterfield, we might never have known about President Nixon's secret tapes. Here's the former White House aide, 1973, testifying at Senate Watergate hearings. But the first voice you'll hear, I think he's selling reverse mortgages now, but he was then the United States Senator from Tennessee, Fred Thompson. Here he is.
Mr. Butterfield, are you aware of the installation of any listening devices in the Oval Office of the President?
I was aware of listening devices. Yes, sir.
When were those devices placed in the Oval Office?
Approximately the summer of 1970. I cannot begin to recall the precise date. My guess, Mr. Thompson, is that the installation was made between, and this is a very rough guess, April or May of 1970 and perhaps the end of the summer or early fall 1970.
Are you aware of any devices that were installed in the executive office building office of the president?
Yes, sir, at that time.
Were they installed at the same time?
They were installed at the same time.
Takes your breath away. Alexander Butterfield and his boss, the president, are the focus of Bob Woodward's great new book. It's called The Last of the President's Men. Bob, it's great to meet you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Oh, great to meet you and have you here as well, Bob Woodward. You end that scene in your book with Butterfield saying something that he said he regretted saying. What was that?
Well, at the end of that testimony, he said he thought that the tapes would be used by Nixon to prove that Nixon, was innocent. Of course, Butterfield knew that Nixon was not innocent and regrets saying that.
Bob, what's the most important thing you think you learned that you didn't know about Richard Nixon before? I'm guessing it was the Kissinger memo of January 72 and this scribbled response from the president?
Yes, I think so. But first of all, I thought I was done with Nixon. Having written four books about him, two of them with Carl Bernstein, and I went out to Butterfield's place in California in 20 boxes of documents, and some of them never seen before. And, of course, Watergate is the management of the political system by Nixon to spy on and sabotage the Democrats to win election. It turns out that Nixon was managing the Vietnam War, one of his greatest responsibilities, in order to win re-election. And it is shocking, this particular
memo.
Say
what this memo said and then what he wrote on the memo back to Kissinger.
Yeah, what he wrote back is he said this is early January 72, so he's been in office 3 years, said all the bombing and the air operations in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, result equal zilch.
Zilch.
Total failure. And his argument for 3 years was that this bombing was very effective. Just the night before, he said in a nationally televised interview that it was very, very effective. And so, and you connect the dots with other tapes and documents, and you realize that this is all about winning re-election, not the war, which he acknowledged, at least the bombing, achieved zilch. And, of course, he'd pulled all the combat troops out, so there was no way to win. It was lost. It was over.
Well, Bob Woodward, you describe these tapes as revealing a White House, and this is a quote from your book, full of lies, chaos, distrust, speculation, self-protection, maneuver, and countermaneuver, with a crookedness that makes Netflix House of Cards look unsophisticated. And you also talk about a certain pettiness that was made real to me when he saw pictures of his predecessor in the White House, John Kennedy. Tell people about that.
Yeah, this is, again, one of these things that's a jolt, even for Nixon. He was walking around the staff offices and saw some people had pictures of JFK, and he came back and ordered Butterfield, who had this, who was this kind of guy who would do anything Nixon asked, said, this is an infestation. We have to get all of the JFK pictures out of these offices. And Butterfield launched an investigation and got all of the Kennedy pictures out. And It's astonishing. Replace them with Nixon pictures, and his final memo directly to the president is entitled "Sanitization of the Staff Offices," and you see that throughout this, one of the themes in the book, the rage Nixon felt for anyone who, like the Kennedys, had things handed to them, and he just, you know, goes off on this years and years later. There's no inner peace, and of course, he's consumed with being reelected, and will do anything, as we know, about the criminality of the Watergate cover-up. You take My Lai Massacre, if I may, for a
of
moment.
Of course.
I mean, here is one of the great war crimes of all time, 500 people killed by U.S. soldiers. As soon as this surfaces through the brilliant reporting, quite frankly, of Cy Hirsch, and Nixon sees this, oh, this threatens his war policy, and so he calls Butterfield in, and the notes Butterfield took of Nixon's directions are on this yellow legal paper that's faded, and Butterfield wrote top secret because it was so explosive. And you look in here, and Nixon orders let's check on the background of everyone involved. Everyone must be exposed. We must discredit those who brought this story out. Time and Life magazine, Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes. We have to do anything we can. Let's get the right-wingers on our side. Let's put a tail. Let's spy on. Let's follow the chief whistleblower in this case. And, you know, My Lai was something. I mean, here we have President Obama just recently personally, publicly apologizing for the accidental bombing of a hospital.
Doctors Without Borders.
No apology from Richard Nixon. Attack, deceive, lie, follow, spy, get the right-wingers on his side. And so there's a politicalization here that's a level of corruption that is like Watergate.
Bob Woodward, for young reporters or reporters in waiting out there, how do you get the Butterfields? So what is it, like waterboarding when you go out to California? No, I'm saying, is it because you're Bob Woodward? What do you tell a young kid who says Butterfield gave none of this to anybody else?
That's
and he
right.
gives it to Bob Woodward.
And
so
he
what's
sat
the
on
deal?
It for 40 years and never told his story. He was thinking of writing and tried to write his own memoir. I have the luxury of time. And when I ran into Butterfield a couple of years ago, we started talking. And I said, I better go see what he's got, because one of the theories of reporting on stories like this, everyone who comes from the White House, CIA, Supreme Court, takes a box yeah. of documents and puts them in the attic. Of course, Butterfield had 20. And as soon as I went out there and said, well, you know, we need to tell this story because this is another dimension of the monumental corruption of Richard Nixon.
Well, you talk at one point about the destructive power of hate, which you certainly create and elaborate on. But I wonder about a guy like Butterfield, or like, well, this is a book about him, so let's stick with him. He doesn't go in to serve at the White House with the idea that he's going to get caught up in this. So what is his reflection about how he might have done it differently?
Well, he came in as a 42-year-old Air Force colonel. He resigned from the Air Force to get this job. Obviously, I mean, so many people would take it where you have a front row seat right next to the president. But when he looks back on it, he says, you know, so much of this was a cesspool. And Nixon ordered Butterfield to put a spy in the Secret Service unit that was guarding Teddy Kennedy. And Butterfield looks back on that and said, you know, I could have been indicted for that. I'm shocked at my own behavior. So there's a level of confession in this that I think adds to the credibility of the story.
Do you feel like you know Nixon? Do you, I don't mean know about him. Do you feel, since you've spent so much of your life chronicling the exploits of this president, do you feel like you know him? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I know sides of him, and in fairness, you know, he did some important things on the domestic front and foreign affairs. But there was this criminality, this, you know, willingness to do anything to be reelected or smash and destroy real or perceived enemies. And we can't have that in a president. I mean, the president is supposed to do and figure out what the next stage of good is for people in the country, and has to do it, right now, having written about Nixon, up a couple of books about Obama, other presidents, such a concentration of power in the presidency. I think it's increased since Nixon. And that means with that power, you can do a lot of good or a lot of bad.
We're talking to Bob Woodward. His newest book is The Last of the President's Men. I remember the images I always saw of his wife, Patricia Nixon, Pat Nixon, looking incredibly pinched, like her mouth was sort of pinched. And you talk about this paradoxical thing where publicly he often almost humiliated her and embarrassed her and treated her poorly. And yet at her funeral, he was beside himself.
Well, that's not contradictory. I mean, it wasn't in public that he snubbed her and was indifferent. It was in private. And he would communicate with her by memo and saying, RN, Richard Nixon, talk about himself in the third person. He wanted her to do certain things like, you know, only meet a few people at state dinners, and like he did, and proposed this to Butterfield. Butterfield, who was in charge of the Pat Nixon account, met with her a couple of times a week, said, do you want to do this? And she said, what? Alex, you've got to be kidding. And Butterfield said, look, the president does it and proposed it for you. And she said, no, I like to meet everyone. Of course, Nixon did not.
You know, one thing you haven't written about Richard Nixon, I don't know if there's more except maybe Nixon the high school years. My mother was an FDR Democrat, and she was a secretary in an office, and her best friend, and she hardly spoke to Republicans, was a woman by the name of Katie Donlan. And she was a big-time Republican. Katie wrote to Richard Nixon when he lost to John Kennedy and said, I'm really sorry, I was a big supporter of yours. She received a handwritten letter back from the president, from the losing candidate, Richard Nixon, but almost by return mail, rather pathetically saying that other than people who worked for him or were part of his entourage, she was one of the only people who wrote him a letter saying how sorry she was. Does that fit the MO?
No, sure it does, because there's a certain kind of, hey, look, everyone's against me. No one's writing me letters. No one loves me. No one understands the great things I'm trying to do. And, you know, you wanted to give him a Valium gargle. You wanted him to kind of soothe out, mellow out, say, hey, I'm president. There's a lot of goodwill out there. And instead, he's involved in these deceptions and, you know, these obsessions that are much greater than I thought just from the tapes and prior work.
Bob Woodward, we're talking to Bob Woodward. His latest book is The Last of the President's Men. Did I read that you compared the Hillary Clinton emails to the Nixon tapes? And if it's true, how?
Yes, I did. I stand by that, and it's been demonstrated. But the context was the volume. 60,000 emails and Nixon 4,000 hours of tapes and the Hillary Clinton emails. Who knows where this goes? If we had all your emails, I'm sure you said some stupid and controversial things.
I'd be unemployed, I think.
Yeah,
I would,
that's right. And so, you know, emails are an entry into the head in a way, and so people want to know. And I think it's fair that people want to know.
Well, you know, you also asked, I think it was on Joe Scarborough's show on MSNBC, the big question about Hillary Clinton is, who is she? Is she the secretive hidden person or this valiant public servant? What do you think?
Well, see, the answer from newer have known her and have done books in which she's heavily involved. There are both sides of Hillary Clinton, and the question is, it's almost genetic, which one is dominant? And this is the debate going on, rightly so, and I think the press now has that responsibility to dig into exactly who she is, but it's got to be done fairly, but it's got to be done by the media in a nonpartisan way. And in this environment that's so politicized and so divisive, that's mighty difficult, but that's the assignment. And I hope if she's Democratic nominee, whoever the Republicans nominate, when people go to the polls, there's going to be a body of good, hard, in-depth, investigative, biographical analysis of, so no one can say the next day, hey, you know, I voted, but I didn't have enough information on these people.
You know, Bob Woodward, if you got four books out of Richard Nixon, I assume you'll get about 40 out of President Trump. So let's talk about him for a second. John King was with us a few minutes ago from CNN, and he and I are on the same page. Marjorie just can't handle this.
Yeah.
That he's been around long enough in the lead that this is not going to be Herman Cain redux or Michelle Bachmann redux. And while King didn't say he thinks he's going to be the nominee, I think at least he has a real serious shot of being the nominee. How do you explain the phenomenon, and do you think he's got staying power?
Well, you know, this we don't know, and it's always my argument that we don't know enough about the past, and we sit around and trying to speculate on the future. But, I mean, he's got some staying power. There's no question. I think his supporters are largely no votes. It's a way of saying, I don't like Washington, I don't like politicians. Whether those people will go to the polls, we don't know, but you have to look at both parties. Democratic Party is going to find a progressive to nominate, whoever that is, whether it's, you know, Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or somebody, Joe Biden coming. Who are the Republicans going to nominate? They are going to nominate somebody who's kind of in some form in the image of Ronald Reagan. Reagan is a god in the Republican Party. Whether you agree or disagree, he is a god. And as we slowly go through the stations of the cross, which is what the primary season is about, that we are going to learn an awful lot about the Republican candidates. And I think the person who can credibly say I'm the replication or I have many of the values of Reagan, that's who the Republicans are going to nominate.
We only have a minute left. Can Donald Trump credibly say those words?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of evidence and problems with him. You look at his record, he's detached from reality very often. The idea of building, deporting 11 million people is off the charts. He's conflict-oriented. He feeds on conflict. We need a president who's going to be the opposite, who's going to bring people together. I think people are kind of tired of conflict and gridlock. So a lot's going to happen, particularly when in this age of speed and internet, things could change in a week.
Bob Woodward, it's a pleasure to meet you, and congratulations on your new book.
Yeah,
it's terrific.
Congratulations. Thank you so much for being with us. Bob Woodward's latest book is The Last of the President's Men. Bob Woodward will be at the First Parish Church tonight at 7 o'clock in conversation with David Gergen. To learn more about getting tickets, go to harvard.com. Thank you again for being here. Coming up, we talk to Dan Pashman, the man who's cracked the code to happier eating. He's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.